Welcome to another edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. I'm Ryan Dobson, and our host is psychologist and author Dr. James Dobson. And, Dad, you know, I was really struck by the content of our conversation yesterday because it's obvious that the demographics of the family are changing, and they're changing faster than we've ever seen it before. So today's broadcast is very timely because we're releasing the second book in your trilogy with Kurt Bruner, and the second book is called Childless.
Well, Ryan, I thought that was a very stimulating and exciting program last time with Kurt Bruner, who is my colleague. We've worked together for many years when we were both at Focus on the Family, and we have now written a trilogy, and they are novels about a time 30 years from now when the world will have changed dramatically if, and almost certainly, it follows the trends that we're seeing now.
Yeah.
Kurt Bruner is the author of many best-selling books. He is a pastor, a theologian, and a very, very gifted writer. And Kurt, it's good to have you back.
I'm excited to be here.
And Fatherless is the name of the first book. The second is Childless, and the third one will be called Godless. And it really tells a story of where this nation, and in fact the world, is headed. And it's a pretty dire prediction, but it's not one that you and I have thought up. It is being recognized and worried over by many people who are out there.
These trends are in the headlines now. These predictions are in the headlines now. They're actually not predictions as much as projections, because we already know the demographic realities that we'll be facing in 30 years.
And you've been studying that to come up with these things. You've been looking at the markers and the social markers and the demographic markers and those things. This is where we're heading, and you can see it in other places around the world.
Absolutely, right now. In fact, the goal here was not to create a novel series that is depicting what could be or speculates, but rather what's likely or probable to occur. And everyone who's read the advance copies has said the same thing. I can see this is exactly where we're heading. There's been no surprise, no, oh, you guys are being extreme or anything of that nature, which may be surprising to some, because one of the foundational themes of this book is that we're reaching a tipping point on the population to where we're moving towards depopulation.
Right.
After a generation or two being worried about overpopulation, it goes all the way back to Thomas Malthus in Great Britain, where he projected we're going to run out of food, the world's going to not have enough food, we need to limit population. He was the one who came up with the phrase that you may recall from Charles Dickens, we need to decrease the surplus population. Well, Dickens was writing about a philosophy that was taking over at the time, and that is we have too many people on this planet. We need to eliminate or reduce, and that's where many of the movements that have led to where we are today.
Population Bomb was a book written by Ehrlich.
Back in the 70s, I think early 70s, which all of those things have been completely debunked. They were completely wrong. Malthus admitted he was wrong about those projections, and yet to this day, most of us still have this myth in our mind that our big problem demographically is overpopulation. But our real demographic crisis is a demographic winter, and that is we have too many old and too few young because fertility has dropped at a rate unprecedented in human history. We have never been in this territory in human history.
Kurt, talk about that a little bit. I don't think people understand that. We talk about overpopulation as if that's something that we're dealing with, and we're not. There is a drastic decline in fertility rates and in birth rates.
Right. And the reason people think that is because the number of people is still going up.
Sure.
The reason it's going up is not because suddenly people started breeding like rabbits. It's because they stopped dying like flies.
Yeah.
Because the mortality rate used to be so high. So what we had is a bubble, an explosion of population based on the fact that we're living longer. Instead of to 40, we're living to 80. But that hits a certain cap, and then it starts to move in the other direction. And when that does, invariably throughout history, any subset of the population that had population decline hit economic crisis at the same time. So many of the issues we're reading in the papers that people are blaming on this or that social issue or this or that economic policy are simply rooted in the fact we don't have enough young people being born and families being formed to buy houses and to drive the economy and to launch businesses and so on and so forth. Well, we put that all out 30 years into the future. And part of what this does, as we talked about last time, it's dystopian literature. We're showing how dark it could be so that the light of what's good and what's beautiful mm-hmm. can shine all the brighter. And so mm-hmm. it might be a good idea. I brought some clips. Maybe we should actually dive in and hear the story.
I want to get to them. I want to make sure everybody understands what we're talking about. We're talking about the inversion of the pyramid.
Right.
Where typically you have fewer old people and more babies and young people, and the young take care of the old. That's the way it's been historically. What we're facing, and in 2042, that will flip, and we will have far more old people, and we don't have the young people to either work for them or take care of them. So regardless of whether we are increasing in population or not, the question is, what will the nature of that humanity be when this occurs? You have all these sick people and you have no way to take care of them, and Social Security is bankrupt mm-hmm. and all the implications of that. Now, we're looking 30 years into the future. Let's go 30 years into the past. And a Swiss philosopher named Francis Schaeffer, a Christian with incredible insight, was doing the same thing for our generation as we're doing for the generation coming. That was 30 years ago that he was writing. And he was telling us then that abortion and infanticide and euthanasia are all three divisions or examples of this same phenomenon, which is a devaluation of life. Mm-hmm. And we're going to see that in spades between now and 2042.
And it breaks my heart to say this, but I think it's an accurate statement. You get a yawn to that statement in this generation because we become so programmed to think, well, yeah, but what are you going to do to stop abortion? Right. Well, what are you going to do? It's become so the new normal that in Francis Schaeffer's day, we thought, no, it'll never reach that point. It's now prompting yawns. What these novels do is move it out 30 years, and we don't yawn when we suddenly discover, wait a minute, the economy is going to collapse because of what we've been doing? See, because we seem to care about our pocketbook more than we do about the moral issues. And that plays out in politics, even on the conservative side of politics. People may find it interesting that some of the villains in these books are fiscal conservative politicians. Because you know what? You can do great evil in the name of it's pragmatically sensible from a financial standpoint. And so that plays out in the stories as well.
So what our book is focusing on is not only a projection for the future, but profound spiritual warfare and immorality as a way of life.
And I think the best way to capture that is perhaps to move into one of the scenes.
Let's do it.
One of the early. In fact, this is the opening scene of the first book, which is Fatherless. Again, set in the year 2042.
I didn't expect the person killing me to yawn in boredom. The small print under her name, Hannah, reads Transition Specialist. I recognize the title from the online permission form. One of the many thoroughly trained, warm-hearted associates who provide essential services to our heroic volunteers. She probably exhausted her warmth earlier in the day. I'm Hannah's fifth appointment since noon. There are at least three more in the waiting room nervously anticipating their final moments in this very room. She'll be eating a late dinner tonight. I never met the physician. I guess that's to be expected. Doctors don't take temperatures or check blood pressure. They delegate routine procedures like mine. I'm just another lame horse needing a swift, painless end to my misery. No, not a horse. Horses bring value to the farm. I've been pure expense for 18 years, just when humanity needed all hands on deck. On her third attempt to locate a viable vein, Hannah sighs at the inconvenience of my gaunt arms. At 18, I'm around 7 decades younger than her usual client, so she probably expected less aggravation. I guess every job has its little annoyances. I feel like I should make small talk. So, tell me about yourself. Do you have a partner or kids? What's a good-looking girl like you doing killing a guy like me? Laughter eases the tension. But I've never made people laugh. I've always made them uneasy, like an unsightly but harmless bug. They instinctively back away. I suppose laughter would be out of place here anyway. I know what Hannah's thinking. How could any parent put a child through so much suffering? The inverse of my question, why should any mom make so much sacrifice? And none of it necessary. The sleepless nights, the condemning stares, precious years and a small fortune spent helping me cope in a world designed for those far more capable. Such a waste. I suppose it fits that my appointment landed on the precise day demographers projected America would cross the tipping point toward depopulation. They missed the actual day by 2, but that doesn't matter. The date was symbolic anyway. It has been the topic of every headline, talk show, political commentary, academic symposium, and barstool debate this entire week. We are now officially in the same leaky boat as the rest of the developed world. So, I decided to do my part. Since I celebrated my birthday last Thursday, I no longer needed mom's consent. Mothers have never liked it when their sons enlist. But I know I've done the right thing. As the first drops of yellow toxin begin seeping into my bloodstream, Hannah studies the healthy habits chart over my left shoulder on the wall. Though much younger, she reminds me of my mom. Not her features, her movements. She carries herself with a sturdy yet motherly persistence. I want Hannah to look in my eyes. She doesn't. She can't. During our farewell dinner last night, Mom said her heart aches like it did when Dad left. What else would she say? I can't remember Dad's face, just the scent of his cologne. I miss his smell. Mom said she misses his playful whispers in her ear. She blushed when she said that. I'm pretty sure Dad secretly blamed Mom for me. And like most sensible people, he wanted to stop after one child. Mom insisted Jeremy needed a sibling. They imagined a healthy girl. I'm neither. They call enlisting to transition a heroic service to the public good. In truth, I'm doing it for Mom. She deserves to have a life. Besides, I'm tired of living on the debit side of the ledger. No one has ever called me a debit directly, but the slang fits. They instead feign sympathy while mentally tabulating the costs. The latest numbers show another significant drop in the ratio of productive workers to elderly and disabled dependents. The math no longer works. People like me divert young and healthy workers from desperately needed innovation and growth. I won't let that continue. I know I'm worthless, but I have my pride.
You've been listening to a clip of Fatherless, a new novel out by my dad, Dr. James Dobson, and Kurt Bruner. Kurt, I read that a few days ago, and I think what struck me, maybe it wouldn't strike everybody this way, but I've worked with kids for so long that to me that was so feasible. You've got kids in a transition stage in their life anyway, and a lot of them feel downtrodden or isolated, and they act out in different ways. That was so probable. It just made me sad. Mm-hmm. I thought I've known so many kids in the high school age or shortly after high school where he was at who feel so worthless and so rejected. Whether it's true or not, there's so many things going on at that point that can sway your self-worth. That could easily be taking place if it was available today, and that's what you're predicting might happen 30 years in the future.
Yeah. And Kurt, even more so for the menopausal woman who feels like life is over, her kids are grown, she's depressed all the time, she's got all the symptoms of menopause, or a 50-year-old man who has a congenital defect or problem or disease. And it seems like an easy way out. And as we said last time, a heroic way out because you save the family's financial resources by not having to be given medical care that there's probably not government money to pay for. You're going to have to pay for it, and your children are not going to be able to go to college or to have an opportunity in life. So why don't I just do a loving thing and transition out? And by the way, that word was used, but throughout the book, transition is another word for euthanasia.
Right. Transition. Doesn't it sound nice from a fiscal conservative standpoint? Why not transition your assets and resources to the younger generation rather than having them be wasted on your care in later life, or in this case, a disabled person who would be expensive to care for and so forth? So you're going to transition your resources, which sounds so plausible, so rational, doesn't it?
And what we are projecting 30 years from now are these clinics everywhere, like Planned Parenthood. Who would ever have believed 50 years ago that there would be these places where you could kill your baby like there are now, one of them two blocks from my house. But there will be clinics of that nature for
providing an essential service to our heroic volunteers.
Exactly.
Let me share a couple of the real-world trends that are behind what you just heard depicted. All right, so let's connect this back to where we are. One of the best books on this topic is one by Philip Longman called The Empty Cradle, where he unpacks the implications of a world where fertility has dropped dramatically, where population will drop. A couple of things he says. The population growth we see all around us and that so informs our worldviews is a waning phenomenon. Even in the United States, the mighty United States, a nation that in the last two centuries has relied upon population growth more than any other to extend its boundaries and project its power, the prospect of rapid population aging is now inevitable. He goes on elsewhere and says, forecasts by the United Nations and others show the world population growth rate could well turn negative during the lifetime of people now in their 40s and 50s, and it's very likely to do so before today's children reach retirement age. And that's that inversion of the pyramid. In a normal situation, you have grandparents and parents all taking care of a number of children. It's going to reverse because they've only had one child now for a generation or two generations. And they have to take care of now their parents and their grandparents.
Now, Kurt, it's important that our listeners understand that these books are not primarily demographic data like you just quoted.
The novels.
The novels. The novels are stories of people, real people.
That's right. Living in the world defined by those realities.
Okay. As we approach the end of this second program on these novels, it's important that people understand that there is hope within the content. And it comes from biblical truth.
It comes also from God's. I'm going to say it this way. It comes from the beautiful, iconic picture of God's image on earth as depicted in a family, in marriage, in parenthood. You see, as you read the stories, one of the main characters is seeking to advance what he calls bright spots. In a dark world, there are these bright spots. And what are these bright spots? These bright spots are those communities that value children and the aged, those things that are biblical concepts, right?
Yeah.
But as a result, the economy in those regions are thriving and doing well because there's innovation and there's passion. And grandparents, instead of feeling like they're worthless and they should kill themselves, are actually helping their young people start businesses because we'll take care of the grandkids. You know, that's the way it's supposed to work. And that's the world we've moved away from. But those lights and those bright spots of hope are laced throughout these stories.
Ryan, I have watched you carefully with the arrival of your two children, my grandchildren, and they mean more to you than anything else in your life, don't they? I mean, you pour your lives into Lincoln and Lucy.
And Laura, yeah.
Yeah, can you imagine an era that may be coming when your own children will be living in the kind of changes that we've been describing?
I can. It's scary, but I can. I think that's probably what is going to happen. I've thought about that a lot because, you know, we homeschool Lincoln and we teach him things that will make him odd in the future. But as he gets older, being a conservative will be very odd. You know, believing in religious freedom will be odd. All the things that we love and hold dear, I miss America. I miss what our country stood for. And I'm afraid for the country they're going to grow up in, but I'm doing everything I can to change it. And I'm raising Lincoln and Lucy to be agents of change as well so they can make it a better place.
This is why I have devoted 40 years of my life to defending righteousness, not just the family, the institution of the family and procreation and all the things that we find in Scripture, but righteousness itself. Does that get it said?
It does. And guess what? Here's the hope. How do we turn it around? One couple at a time, creating a bright spot in their own home. I'm going to tell you a story to wrap up. On the plane here, fascinating day. I get on the plane and I'm seated towards the back. And of course, toward the back is where all the families with the kids
yeah.
would, right?
Yeah, now, that's where I sit.
I am so immersed in these trends and what's happening. I've come to the point that, you know, when you see a soldier approaching and you say, thank you for your service, mm-hmm. I'm starting to do that with any pregnant woman I see. Or thank you for your service, because so few are willing to have kids these days. But I'm in the back with these young couples who, and some of them non-couples, just dads or moms, with these kids who are screaming the whole time, right? And I'm sitting there, unlike most people, relishing it because this is the future. Yes, thank you for having children. Uh-huh. I get off the plane, go to get my car. Young man, about 22, 23, just graduated from college. He hears, as we're getting into the car, he hears some kids crying in the distance. Maybe some of the same kids I just heard on the plane. And he says, oh, that sound is why I'm glad I don't have any kids. And I said to him, you just said that to the absolute wrong person. Oh, let me tell you why I'm in town and what we're talking about. And that is that we are in trouble. We need people mm-hmm. to be willing to sacrifice themselves to raise the next generation. So he got a little bit of a deer in the headlights look. And then he made another mistake because he says, well, you know, economically, it's so hard these days and so forth. I says, wait a minute. It's proven. The statistics show married men tend to make more money, and those who have children tend to do better financially because you're motivated and so on and so forth, all the stuff that George Gilder has talked about. So then he's got the deer in the headlights look again. So finally he comes around, he thinks, and he says, well, I guess I'm taking a step in the right direction because my girlfriend and I are about to move in together. And I says, no, that's another mistake because that devalues marriage. Just commit to the girl. Stop playing around.
Yeah,
and so
nice to have met you.
Yeah, so I drive away and he says, man, I hope I never meet that guy again. But that's where I'm at right now, and that is celebrating the beauty of anyone who's getting married and having kids. And if you're in the older generation, help them make that a reality, right? Don't tell them wait till you're 40 to get married so that you have all the money in the bank. Tell them to start having kids. Start preserving the next generation and creating that future for us. That's the hope, in my view.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me say this again. At the top of the program last time when we introduced this trilogy, this three-book novel series, that you came out, we went to lunch together, and you talked to me about the things we've talked about today and asked if I would like to be part of it and to help with the writing. And I'm honored to do so because I really believe this series could have a major impact on this culture. Let me tell our listeners again, the first book is called Fatherless. The second book is called Childless. And the third book is Godless. And that's where we're headed if we don't turn this around. And ultimately, and I know you agree with this as a pastor, as a theologian, ultimately, we need a nationwide revival, yay, a worldwide revival, mm-hmm. a spiritual renewal that will pull people back to the principles that we were taught when we were young, when I was young. This was the whole world. Not everybody was a Christian, but everybody understood there was truth there.
That's right.
And they don't now. And what we saw in the last election is millions of people turning their back on some of those fundamental principles. And I grieve over it. Maybe these three books that we're writing will make a difference.
We want them to be missiles in a great counterattack against this spiritual warfare enemy, Satan. And so get 10 of these missiles and get a reading group together and start talking about these themes.
Thank you, Kurt. It's a pleasure doing business with you.
Definitely. And turning to our listeners, if you're ready to get that reading group started, Family Talk is the place to go for both of these books. The first and the second of the trilogy are now available. Fatherless, the first one, and Childless, which just dropped today. It's hot off the presses. Go to drjamesdobson.org or ask about it when you call us. Our number is 877-732-6825. And if you missed the program yesterday, listen online or on the Family Talk app when you've got a minute. And then pass it along to a friend. Post it to your Facebook page. It is a thought-provoking discussion. And if you like what you've heard today, join us and partner with Family Talk financially. Your gift will help Family Talk continue to impact the culture by helping you build strong marriages and families. So donate online today or via the Family Talk app or when you call 877-732-6825. Thanks for spending time with us today, and come back next time when we'll talk about the elements of what makes for truly courageous men with our guests Dennis Rainey and his son Ben Rainey. That's next time on Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
Family Talk is not affiliated with Focus on the Family.